20 pods in June, they said it wouldn't be busy at all. Norwich City have raced out of the traps this summer. New head coach, 6 new signings, plenty more still yet to happen. And of course, they are now back in pre-season training ahead of the 25-26 championship campaign. And with that, we've also made our return. Welcome back to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. I'm your host, Connor Southall, joined by Sam Seaman, Paddy Davitt, and Adam Harvey, and we've got a lot to get through. But first and foremost, if you're watching, if you're listening, this will mean absolutely nothing to you. But we are back in our studio where we will be this season after home games, recording these podcasts, which is great. Not much work has gone in here. It's been more kind of outside, but I won't bore you with all of those details. We're back in here anyway with all of the backdrop, and we're hoping to add to that in the coming weeks as well. Paddy, let's start with you. First and foremost, I mean, I've seen you, but the people haven't seen you, really. How are you? How's your summer been so far? A bit cooler today in the UK.
Yeah, that's good with my Celtic roots, so I'm very happy about that. Although I was just saying to one of our colleagues, we just had a meeting just generally about plans. And we're recording today after the 30 plus degrees of consecutive heat. And I've sent my 5-year-old to his reception class in a T-shirt today and shorts as well. Get that out there. And he's turned around before the doors opened and asked where the jumper was, and I said, well, I'll have to go home to get you a jumper. So bad parent there, but don't quite know
it's
why.
Character building.
Yeah, well, this is it, you know, can't all be sunshine, can it? You get the old clouds as a metaphorical reference to all things Norwich. But I was trying to think as you came to me there, Connor, I don't recall doing too much out of the ordinary other than not having to go somewhere around the country on a magical mystery tour covering Norwich. That's always nice to have a little breather from the pounding the miles. But it doesn't feel like much of an off season for the reasons you've already alluded to. You know, they've gone rat a tat tat in quick order, and just feels almost, you know, around, and we'll get into, I'm sure, you know, Leon Manning's unveiling that from there on it's been business as usual. The only thing missing is the games, and in very short order now, you know. I think it's a week this coming Saturday now, the first game, Northampton behind closed doors at Colney. We're off and running. They're already back in pre-season training. So a lot of positivity I'm detecting, a lot of optimism as well, which was badly needed after the way last season finished.
Yes, and we will come back to that point. I'll do the obligatory now. I'll start with Pad. I mean, you gents, have you done anything particularly out of the normal, I suppose, in the summer so far?
Not recently. I went to Budapest, but that was like 6 weeks ago. But I'm trying to think when the last time we did a podcast was. Was it right after the end of the season?
In person, yeah.
Probably. Yeah. In which case,
we've obviously been doing window watches over the summer. So you have seen and heard from us, but in terms of an actual sit down podcast, I think this is the first shortly after the end of the season.
So yeah, I suppose I've been on holiday, even though that feels like a long time ago now. As you say, it's been quite busy in terms of the transfers and stuff like that. You always hope that it pays dividends later on, and that none of us are going to be staying up late on transfer deadline day, but we'll have to.
Well, on that, I don't know who out there, clearly someone is shining down on us, because they've actually moved forward the deadline. It finishes now at 7 o'clock rather than 11 or 1:30 or 2 and that fateful summer evening. It was early hours, wasn't it, when we were waiting for Yu Zhou Huang and Danny Bart.
Yeah,
it's not a few years off my life that day.
Yeah, I'm very, very glad to see the back of that. But we'll see how long clubs can stretch it out, because they seem to be intent on setting records every year as to how late they can do those transfers. So we'll see. But hopefully the early start has meant that Norwich City won't be too active that late on.
Can you better Budapest, Adam?
I can't. Yeah, it's been quite a quiet summer for me, to be honest, away from all the busyness of Norwich City's transfer activity and various other paraphernalia. But I did have a trip to Wales right at the end of the season, so that would have been start of May time. But apart from that, just a lot of painting, DIY, outdoor jobs that I've sort of been putting on hold. Still working through the renovations of my house at the moment, but hopefully get some downtime and holiday at some point, maybe during an international break later in the year instead.
Yes, indeed. And as we know, there's plenty of those in the first section of the season. Nothing major at all. I spent my weekend looking at dinosaur bones. My 5-year-old's big into dinosaurs, so I'm probably as clued up as I've ever been on various types of saurus and rexes and all that stuff. So Natural History Museum, there's also a very, not that I'm plugging or that they've sponsored, they can if they like, the Jurassic World Experience in Battersea. I was walking around, which is very good. probably not ideal in sort of 30 degree heat though, which is what it was. That wasn't ideal. So that's about as exciting as my summer has got in truth. Right, that's enough banal stuff on us. Let's go on to Norwich City, because Padgett, you referenced the optimism that is building, and obviously we'll go into a lot of individual elements, but I might have even said it on the podcast post Cardiff. I kind of walked away from Carrow Road, and I'm sure there were plenty of Norwich fans who maybe did or didn't, and looked like Jack Wilshere was in line to get the job. Angus Gunn clearly was going. There was and still is lots of speculation around Borja Sainz and Josh Sargent, maybe less so Marcelino Nunez at the moment. It felt like Norwich, well, I was probably worried about the direction that they were heading in. 6-7 weeks later, it feels in a drastically different place.
Yeah, and credit to, you know, Ben Napper primarily and his team around him for changing quite dramatically that needle, that dial, from that point to, as I say, still early days yet, and I've certainly done enough pre-seasons, I won't paying any store by results in these warm-up games. It's really about that first, you know, Alex Neil, who brings Millwall here on the opening day, he did a bit on TalkSport around a fixture release last week and said the first 10 games in this league are massively important for momentum, for the, you know, maybe the longevity of a coach as well, from their point of view. And I mean, that's the time really when you hope what we're sensing, what we're feeling comes to fruition. But with the cautionary note that you go back to last August, September, and that was the fertile period for Yannis Torup, and we know how that unraveled. So time will tell on that front. But in terms of changing the music, yeah, mood music. I mean, not just, you know, the Liam Manning appointment and what he brings and the Norfolk connection, I think, which, you know, he may wish to downplay that to a degree, understandably, but it is there. And I think that will help in terms of connecting with the fan base, who are massively important in this. As Ben Napper said, he did a couple of media rounds. We went and spoke to him post-season, and then obviously around Liam's unveiling. And they know quite clearly that they have to maybe convince a lot of their fan base that, you know, stay with us on this journey. The end goal hasn't changed. How we envisage doing it hasn't changed. Just as he said, you know, the interchanging element of the head coach. And off the back of that, and this is for me probably as impressive as bringing Liam Manning in and what he potentially will offer, is the speed and the clinical intent and the, you know, ability to defensively particularly make those changes. And of course, you referenced their players leaving. Prime among them was Angus Gunn, and that uncertainty. Okay, you're not offering him a new deal. You can't agree. He moves on. We had the Cardiff farewell, standing captain, stage managed exit. Right, that's done. Massive hole to fill. And it's not just number one with Kovacevic, as I'm pronouncing him. But underneath that, you know, a transformation. It's not overly hyperbole to talk about, you know, the three keepers, i.e. Barden, Long, Reyes, beneath Angus Gunn last season, all seemingly by the fact that they've gone in and brought in two new ones, as well as, you know, Kovacevic. Real signal that they're not messing, that they clearly have identified that was an area of weakness within the squad that finished last season, and they've sought to address it very swiftly, very impressively. Again, proof will be in the pudding, particularly with Kovacevic. We need to see him, don't we, in the championship environment. But I just think that one aspect of the more broader transfer strategy does, to me, suggest they are going to be quite decisive this summer, and that will continue in that vein. And then Ben Napper and his team step back, Liam Manning and his team step forward, and what can they do with that raw material that they're being given, both inherited and what feels like quite a major summer refresh to the squad. So, yeah, if I was a Norwich fan, you referenced there, leaving Carrow Road against Cardiff while having been happy to see Angus and O'Neill and Jakob Sorensen get the farewell, you know, they were after, and a winning farewell. You've had a lot of questions and maybe at that point not too many answers, and I think that has tilted now. And still work to do, clearly. Still those elements around Sainz and Sargent, particularly maybe even Nunez, that will have to play out in due course. But whereas it was a little bit, probably harsh to say, but maybe a sense of adrift and a sense of lack of direction, that very much isn't the case now. You can see the strategy, you can see what they're trying to do, both in terms of the head coach pick and also what they're trying to do to the squad. and it feels like far more cohesive, far more back together again, and they're in a good place, it feels like, at this albeit early start of pre-season.
How are you pronouncing the keeper?
Vladan Kovacevic.
Okay, I was going to go Kovacevic.
No, go and watch his footage.
Okay.
And he definitely
I'm definitely going to wait for the Caro pronunciation guide to nail that one. You've always got any different pronunciations on that? Maybe a Serbian or someone from around that region can help us out.
I think it's Vladan to me.
Vladan, yeah. We might just end up calling him Vlad, I think. Which might be the way that it goes. But Paddy's right, Sam, in terms of the pace of business. Obviously, there's another debate to come on down, later down the track, about efficiency of business. And that's a different conversation. But I think it is difficult not to have been impressed by the speed of it. I looked last year. I mean, we were in Austria, weren't we, when Ben Krasene was announced. And that was the 28th of July, I think. And he was their second summer signing behind Jose Cordoba. They got six in by the end of June, and you know that is an impressive turnaround. Obviously, there is context behind that. There was a Euros last summer, and that complicates things and makes business a little bit slower. But even in the context without one, it's the most, I think, deals done as we sit here today in the Championship of any club. So it'll ultimately be the efficiency, but that speed of change is pretty impressive. I mean, we're speaking to people sort of towards the back end of the season. They spoke about probably recognising the fact they needed to turn the page pretty quickly, and they've done that.
Yeah, definitely. But as you said, you know, last summer was so slow, and you're right about the mitigation with the Euros and things like that. And there was no doubt last summer that pre-season was about change as well. And I'm sure they would have liked to do that as quickly as possible. So that probably showed you how difficult it can be to get that business over the line so early in the summer. So I think it is really impressive that they've managed to get some of these deals over the line. I think probably if you look at the nature of them, they've got the easier ones out of the way slightly earlier on. They've probably spent less money than maybe I'd expect them to spend on some of the other positions that they'll have to add in going forward. They've obviously brought in a few free agents and maybe also added to the areas of the squad where, although they needed addressing, they probably aren't going to be deciding much next season in terms of the two backup goalkeepers and things like that. So I suppose part of the speed comes down to the correct priorities that they had going into it. I think they've mapped things out well in terms of their strategy, and it's been quite clear to everyone throughout it, really, definitely in contrast to last summer, as to what they wanted to tick off first, what makes sense for them to do first, and then they've gone about it in a really strategic and really efficient way. So yeah, I think the speed of things is really important, not only so that Ben Napper can get those people in the building, so that Liam Manning can work with them, but for the mood of the fans, which anyone will see has quite drastically improved over the last few weeks. And even though there haven't been any games, there haven't been any results to go on, and obviously they normally dictate the mood. I think after such an abject, almost confusing end to last season, when it didn't really seem obvious which direction they were going in, when they sat Johannes Hoftorup very early on in the long-term project that he originally believed that he had, and with the results tailing off, there was a real lack of certainty. But very quickly in this summer, you can already see what Liam Manning's Norwich City squad looks like. It's already taking shape in, of course, a big way with the number of additions they've made. So, yeah, I think it was really important that they started things in that fashion, and you can see the results in the mood of the fan base. And as you said, obviously we'll have to wait and see what the results are on the pitch, and that's the important thing. But I think, to be honest, that the supporters really needed this, and I think they're from what I've seen, very, very encouraged.
Yes, this is the best part of a football season, isn't it? Because everyone's got optimism. There's no games to ruin it. There's no context to ruin it. Adam, in terms of Norwich's business, I think we have seen a shift in terms of the age profile, probably primarily of those core positions that we speak about, the goalkeeper and obviously the two centre-backs that they've brought in. How important was that given what we saw last season? It felt like at times that spine probably wasn't as strong as it needed to be.
Yeah, we've had plenty of discussions, I think, over the course of last year about maybe the age imbalance, seemingly, you know, of the group. There felt like there was quite a number of players, maybe 21 and under, and then a few players sort of in that 30 bracket, but there wasn't that many sort of in what you would deem the prime years, sort of 25, 26, 27, where they've still got, you know, potential for sell-on value in the future for Norwich and the way they operate as a football club, but also they're ready in the here and now. And know, someone like Harry Darling, seasoned championship pro, you know, proved himself at this level now for two or three years at Swansea. And that's probably what I felt they were missing at times last season, you know, in games where maybe they were fighting adversity and they were coming under the cosh. Okay, they've got some experienced pros in there, the likes of Shane Duffy, but you know, some of those other younger men or players from overseas that never, you know, sort of been part of a championship season and the grind of that and how much it takes out of you mentally and physically. I think they've sort of addressed that, and all right, even like Jakob Medic, not played in the championship, but just a little bit more of an experienced player, you know, played in the top flight in various different divisions, and he'll be a little bit more used to it. And I think the fact that some of those individuals are, you know people within the group, you know, obviously clearly the goalkeeper and Antti Sirnaps are well, you know, regarded in terms they know each other from previous clubs. And I think that helps, as much as a lot of it's not about, you know, friendships within a group, and I've seen people make that criticism, but it does help those individuals when they're trying to settle into a new country, a new culture, a new football club, and everything's so different. So everything just feels a little bit more balanced, and yeah, I feel a lot more optimistic about this season than last year. And even those younger players they did bring in last year have now had a year under their belt, and I get another full pre-season under a different manager. So I think all the signs are positive. So, you know, that what could go wrong, I suppose, over the course of the next season.
Yeah, only the games you would you would think. I mean, Medic is a big lad, isn't he?
His neck.
Oh no, yeah. No, so that's come onto his neck. Yeah, I don't know if he's doing any sort of specialist exercises on those, but that's mega. We'll come on to the individual positions in a moment, Pad. But that shift of business, and I guess the timing of it helps Liam Manning, doesn't it? You look at last season. I think Callum Doyle and Emmanuel Forsen, Krizene and Cordoba, they were the only signings in for Oxford. Doyle and Forsen, I think Forsen signed the day before officially. Doyle was the week of. Yeah. Yanis Oftorp didn't really have a settled core heading into that season. That's something that Liam Manning is going to have a bit more of.
Well, I mean, the parallel is, yeah, I mean, and that, I mean, obviously that rolled into Oxford and we had the John Rowe scenario around that opening weekend. But that performance was so far off it, Yanis readily admitted that in as the season unfolded. And contributing to that clearly was the fact that, you know, what would be, particularly with Callum Doyle in those opening months, a key player came in the building, how many training sessions would he have had leading into Oxford? So contrast that now, and as I say, you know, they came in for testing back end of last week. This start of this week is pre-season proper, and really is two new centre-backs, which you would assume Darling and Medic are going to be, plus his first choice keeper, are in from minute one, building those relationships that Adam touched on with their new teammates off the pitch, on the pitch, but also the coaching staff have the players that they know are going to be forming part, a key part of the strategy moving forward, and particularly defensively as well. Can't stress enough, because that was really, you know, what ultimately you look at Yanis's period in charge and whatever he managed to find in terms of offensive and ball science, Josh Sargent, the goals they scored when it was good, the system of play and how fluid it was, completely offset by, was it 68 goals conceded? You're not going to do anything and achieve anything, certainly the aims that Norwich have as a club in this league with a goals against record of that nature. So they had to, for me, focus at the back end of the pitch, back end of the squad. That's what they've done. And now that will afford Manning and his coaching staff to really drill that back four, back three. I know this is a debate which, based on what he did at Bristol, we'll continue to have until we see some actual evidence in terms of Norwich and pre-season. But allows him to build those relationships, build that platform, which will be then key to, you know, taking it on from there. And it's what they do with the ball. But for me, I think, you know, Yanis, while it was good when it came together, it was proven that it wasn't built on very solid foundations, those defensive foundations. And on top of that, of course, you know, what he was asking his centre-backs to do, what he was asking Gunny to do, didn't feel like it was a natural fit. I don't think those are the sort of accusations we'll level at Liam Manning's Norwich. I think it'll be players very comfortable with what they're asked to do, and in terms of their skill set, if they can execute that as well. Because you look at his previous body of work at Bristol, at Oxford, at MK, and you know, you looked at a team, Bristol being the most recent example. Whenever Norwich played them, they looked like a cohesive team with 11 players who understood their roles individually within the collective, within the sub-units, within a team. And the ability to manage that in double quick time, which is what we're trying to hopefully gets under Liam Manning this season, that it isn't another, dare we use the word, which we were told was going to be banned, transitional season. They don't want to hear that now internally. It's about, you know, no, coming together, attacking those top six positions. He's going to have a far better chance of doing that by the fact that they've managed to get some key business done in key areas of the team for me. So, yeah, I think you hope, in comparison with what Giannis was faced with this time last summer, that that will bear dividends in terms of, you know, August, September, October. Norwich look much more equipped to be in and around that top six and sustain it as well. Because obviously, you know, they could have a good start, things could come together, and they're in and around it, but then they fall away. And I think the true test will be, you know, after that first month of the season, when the grind really starts to kick in, whether the processes and the platform that Liam and his coaching staff have put in these weeks now, these days, these training sessions, that will be the test then if we get past 10, 15 games. But, you know, a lot of leaning in at the moment, I think, is we've got a coach in position now who proved last season with, let's be honest, a group of players who I don't think pound for pound were better than Norwich's players, but he managed to bring them together, coach them to a position where they overachieved. Ben Napper talked about that when he unveiled Liam Manning. This guy has a track record of overachieving, getting more from the resource available. So that to me is what makes it feel different to maybe the experiment that Giannis and Glenn were trying. That no, this is a guy now who's at the helm who understands what it takes to deal with that rhythm and the challenges of a championship season, and can get more from the available resource. Because if he can do that, for me, he's got better players to work with here. So you would think that would realistically, and we know there's other teams who have their other agendas, by no manner of means will it be easy for Norwich to be in and around that top six conversation, but you'd have to be reasonably confident that the way the initial part of this is shaping up, that Norwich will be far better equipped to sustain a top six push, which, as Giannis found to his cost, is going to be a key criteria when judging the success or failure of this head coach.
Yeah, 24 players he used in total last season at Bristol City, which is staggering, really, compared to how frequently that Norwich team was chopped and changed. That's why that core feels like it's going to be so important. I do have, well, I'll bring this up now, but I do have an issue with one of the signs, because in some of the club footage they put out, Dan Grimshaw's in thermals, top and bottom, in 30-degree heat. I know he's a Manchester lad, and you know they're typically usually quite cold, but that's taking me to a new level. But I digress. I'm sure he's going to be an excellent goalkeeper. Which, Sam, is probably a nice segue on to the goalkeeper department. I mean, Paddy touched upon it earlier. It has been, obviously, there's still some filling out to do, and the likes of George Long and probably Vicente Reyes and Dan Barton as well, maybe to move on or shift or change how they see that. Under-21s level as well, Riley Mitchell has come in, four goalkeepers in total. That is pretty damning, isn't it, in terms of what we saw last season and what we saw those three goalkeepers produce over that 46 games?
Yeah, I was going to say that's the first thing that you can really possibly take out of that action that they've taken this summer, that, yeah, clearly, particularly Tony Roberts, the head of goalkeeping, but also, of course, Ben Napper and the people around him who helped him make those decisions were not particularly pleased or impressed by the goalkeeping department and their performance last season. I think you look at the numbers, the post shot XG, particularly
they're worse than elite.
Yeah, and that's obviously a stat that sticks out. It's a pretty solid stat as well. I mean, there are obviously certain bits of context that mean it's not entirely reliable, but I think they would have been looking at that and saying, you know, whatever you see with the
match. It matched the eye test, didn't it? Because I remember before Gunn had a bit, I think he did pick it up again towards the end of the season. But there was a period, kind of winter, autumn, where you looked at it and it was like the Norwich goalkeepers didn't make saves. It was every shot, kind of felt like it probably wasn't the reality, but that's what it felt like.
Yeah, and it's a hard one, really, because I think we've all seen Angus Gunn play and said there is a very good championship goalkeeper. And I do still think that Norwich have lost somebody who probably, if you got a bit more confidence into him, could have still been a very decent goalkeeper next season. I don't think by any means it would have been a weakness in the team next season. But obviously they saw an area where they could, or they felt they could improve things. They obviously, Gunn's contractual situation helped them with that. He wasn't the cheapest player either, and that probably should be considered. But if they've been looking at goalkeepers they really like, of course, Lalan Kovacevic, I'm going to say, is somebody they do really like. And they were sat in a position where they went, do they stick with Angus Gunn and, you know, sort of hope that he gets back to his best? Or do they go with someone they really, really believe can go and be a really impressive number one for them next season? And obviously they've taken the gamble, which probably was helped by last season, that defensive record that Paddy referenced, and the way that overall the season went. And in that sense, you can kind of understand things, because if you want a team to be pushing for the playoffs and they finish, where do they finish in the end? 13th?
Yes.
Yeah, 13th. Then what have you really got to lose, you know, by sort of taking that risk? But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting how that unfolds, because clearly not only did they feel they could improve on Gunn, they felt they could improve on every single option who played for them last season. So obviously they brought in Dan Grimshaw and Louis Moulden, I think both of whom Moulden's definitely worked under yeah. Roberts. Obviously Grimshaw's worked under Manning as well. So people who are known by people in the club, and they clearly believe in their abilities. So I suppose the proof will be in the pudding, and we'll have to judge those decisions when the season starts. But I think you look at the way that it unfolded overall last season, and essentially Ben Knapp was presented with a stick or twist choice, as he was with the head coach situation. And I think given the way that things were going in that goalkeeping department, you can understand why he went with twist.
Yeah, and Adam, I think it's a really interesting what they've done with it, because and we had this debate when we spoke about George Long last year. And you know, in an ideal world, you kind of want your second goalkeeper never to play, and that's successful because it means your starting choice has been constantly fit, constantly in form. Clearly, that wasn't the case last season, and it got to a stage where they obviously had to bring Reyes in as well towards the end. And as much as we talk about Angus Gunn and perhaps what he didn't do last season, probably by his own admission, really, the gap between him to George Long, Reyes maybe even as well, who's younger in age and still has lots of potential, that was too great. And it's not just about Big Vlad, it's also it was about trying to close that gap, I think. But in terms of that number one spot, there's a lot of pressure on that signing now as well, because if I'm a fan, I'm looking at it and going, well, you've let Angus Gunn go, who, as Sam said, is very reliable, typically very good championship goalkeeper. Wasn't his best season last year, but the year before we kind of saw what he was about. You're looking at him and it's very binary, isn't it? He's got to be at least as good as Angus Gunn, if not better, for that risk to have paid off.
Yeah, I think you're already seeing that assessment of him as an individual across social media. You know, there's a lot of people clipping at certain games, which is slightly unfair because a lot of them came in the same game, and you know, much is made of strikers. If they bury the first chance in a game, their confidence is high. It's a little bit like that, I suppose. If you're a goalkeeper, if you concede an early goal in a fashion that you don't want to, it kind of sets almost the tone for the rest of the game. So a little bit unjust. And I think Sam's piece with the Polish journalist kind of, you know, elaborated a little bit more on some of the achievements he's had and you know, some of the recognition he's got as a goalkeeper, particularly in that league, and whether that can correlate across to the championship is yet to be seen. But 100%, there's definitely huge pressure on his shoulders. Norwich have committed a fee to him as well, and he's 27. He's not kind of got that sort of buy-in of, oh, he's a young player and he'll develop. And you know, Norwich aren't in a transitional season, as it was branded at times last season. They can't afford for him to take time to settle. He almost needs to be, you know, up and running straight away. But the positives are is the fact that you've got Dan Grimshaw there in reserve, who, you know, had some difficult moments at Plymouth last season, but not helped in a team that, particularly under Wayne Rooney, you know, we saw it in front of our own eyes at Carrow Road, you know, just all over the place they were. And a lot of the goals he conceded wasn't, you know, purely down to his own fault.
He played that night, right?
He did, yeah. Yeah. He did, yeah. So,
you know, well, yeah, it wasn't helped that night. From memory, they were bad defensively.
Yeah. So I think the fact he's, you know, played games in the Championship, and again, you know, has worked under Liam Manning before, that's healthy competition. And even Moulden, you know, is clearly a relatively highly rated goalkeeper, played in League One on loan at Northampton last year, so probably has that capability, hopefully, at some point in the future to try and push as well. So it just feels a much more balanced and competitive group, and that's only a good thing for particularly, you know, Kovacevic in goal, who's going to be pushed by these individuals. Where, you know, I think realistically, if you're Angus Gunn, did he really feel much pressure, you know, from George Long last year? Probably not, and that probably doesn't help him in terms of his performances and trying to, you know, keep his spot as the number one. So overall, I think that area is definitely seeing a significant upgrade. But again, much like a lot of this business, the proof will be in the pudding on the opening day of the season, and that's when you know, the proper judgment and assessment will take place.
Yeah, I've spoken to a few people about Big Vlad who have watched him play on a few occasions, and sense I get, super aggressive in terms of the way he positions himself and quite comfortable on the ball. I think he's going to give us quite a few heart and mouth moments from kind of what you see. I mean, just from the media he's done and some of the clips, looks like a super confident guy. So that's going to be interesting. Looks like he's got a presence about him as well, whether that sort of translates into the way that he plays, and he's quite commanding of his area, we shall see. But even that kind of would feed into maybe what they didn't have in those areas. We're going to take a pause there. We'll come back in part two. We are going to lean into a bit of the back three, back four debate. We're going to talk about what Norwich City still have to do in the market as well. So we'll see you in just a second. Welcome back to the Pinken.com and Norwich City podcast. First one of the 25-26, I'm trying to get used to that, which is why I keep saying it, season. Norwich City obviously back in pre-season training. The countdown is on now to their friendly game, the first one against Northampton at Colney behind closed doors on Saturday week. We've still got a new kit to come and various other bits. The fixtures are out. We're in proper kind of build-up mode now as well. So. And hopefully these podcasts will now be, if not weekly at this stage, very, very regularly. So we're fully tuned in. So now's the best time to make sure you've subscribed and make sure you're with us throughout the season as well. Paddy, just to finish off on kind of the new additions and then we'll move it on. The theme that I think we've seen, particularly with Medic and Big Vlad in goal, is the profile of them. Two guys that got big moves. They performed well at St. Pauli and at Rakow, got big moves to Ajax and Sporting. They didn't quite work out, and now Norwich have kind of picked them up off the back of that. I think, as Adam said in his answer just before we went into the break, there's context around it because it's what does bad look like. And for Vlad, it was playing in the Europa Conference League and beating Chelsea and winning a Polish Cup with Legia, irrespective of kind of how he played. For Medic, it was 23 games in the Bundesliga. Yes, for a team that got relegated in Borkum, but still plenty of positives within that as well. It's interesting that this is sort of the gamble that they've taken, alongside obviously perhaps more calculated, safer recruitment in Harry Darling and in Dan Grimshaw as well.
Yeah, well, again, that shows a flexibility in terms of recruitment and markets and profile of player. Which kind of underpinned it felt that the head coach search more broadly, do you go domestically or domestic experience, or do you go again down the Torrop route? And they clearly were very firmly in the camp that no, they wanted somebody who, ideally, as Liam Manning has proven, you know, knows what it's all about in the Championship very recently. On that specific point about Medic and Kovacovic, as I'm continuing to call him, I probably will now be in the minority, but yeah, I mean, we speak to people who matter behind the scenes, and I think we know the influence now of the American ownership. It's, you look at their work with the Brewers and how they punch above their weight effectively. The data is massive. And since Ben Napper came in, Ben Napper is here because the people who matter and are driving the direction of travel at the football club are firm believers that is how they bridge the gap. They might not have the financial resource, even with, you know, Norfolk Holdings and Mark Attanasio in play now, but can they be smarter? Can they be more strategic? Can they be cleverer? Like, and they're a pot on the pedestal, aren't they? The Brentfords, the Brightons of this world. There is an alternative way to do it that doesn't involve throwing money, good money after bad, in a lot of cases with a lot of clubs in the English game. And with that in mind, data is at the heart of those two deals in particular. They haven't, as you referenced there, looked at Kovacovic goes to Sporting, plays whatever he played. He played four or five games, then he got an injury, came back in, played two more league games for Sporting. They lost both of those around November time. Done. Dusted. That's massive club mentality. He's down the pecking order. He's out the door. No longer required. They go on. They bring in a keeper from, I think, Spain. They go on and win the title in Portugal. So you look at that and you think, well, he's had... And, of course, in between, he goes to Legia. You referenced the Chelsea game, which he was in part of. But I think, overall, it wasn't seen as a huge success for him, that loan posting back to Poland. So he's had a poor 12 months, and certainly not in contrast to the trajectory of his career up to that point, where he was, you know, of course, you know, it's an agent's job, but he was getting touted as the best young keeper in Europe, and, you know, Bayern Munich were linked, but Leverkusen apparently, when he was at Rakow, previous to Sporting, well, yeah, saw, Montpellier, yeah. You know, some top level clubs were in for him, and, you know, four times he was the keeper of the year in Poland. I think he won two or three leagues. That's where Norwich have gone with this deal, and Medic similarly. It wasn't so much he's got the Ajax and he's played a handful of games and he's not cut the mustard at Ajax. you know, might not be the Ajax of Clive Ertman, Van Gaal and Edgar Davids these days, but they're still an iconic name, an iconic brand in European football. And the demands, you can imagine, if you play for Ajax in the Eredivisie, the demands on you there in that league are off the chart in terms of expectation level. So, hasn't worked for him there. He's gone and played Bundesliga at a relegated club, albeit he's, by all accounts, played reasonably well. But with him, again, I think I'm right in saying, is it Sao Paulo? He was in Bundesliga too. Yeah. And they've looked at that. They've looked at the season he had there, where he was a standout, by all accounts. And
under Hörseler as well at Brighton.
Exactly. And with both of those, both with Kovacevic and with Medic, the view, I think, internally, having looked at the data from a much broader sample of data, is that in commensurate leagues, they were a cut above. So, you know, you're not bringing in Kovacevic, for example, and looking at what he did or didn't do at Sporting, who were, of course, you know, competing serially in Europe, going for the Portuguese title serially. You know, you look and see, is he better than what they could have got in the Championship, what they already had in the building, or what they could have gone out and sourced? And their view, looked on the career length data, not the last 12 months, is that is the case. They've backed their judgment, they've got that deal done. And the same with Medic. You know, don't look at what he didn't do at Ajax, or being part of a team who got relegated from the Bundesliga last season. Look at maybe what he did previously at Bundesliga 2 championship level and was a standout at that level. And both in terms of age profile as well, their better years are probably still ahead of them in the right coaching environment. So, you know, it's every deal you're ever going to make as a football club comes with a degree of gamble and a degree of risk, but they're trying to manage the risk, they're trying to mitigate the risk. And they believe, and it's the heart of every single piece of certainly transfer recruitment work they do now, is that the data stacks up and that these guys will prove what they feel they are, which is a cut above the Championship. And if you get more of those type of players than not, then you should have an above average Championship team. And then that's when Liam Manning and his coaches come into play and trying to go back to what we said earlier, extract more from the available resource and just fill in the gaps then to make them from better than average in the Championship to actually top six, and maybe even better than top six if it all comes together. So that's very much at the core of the philosophy, but certainly going into the recruitment this summer, and you'll see that play out from here as well. Any business that they do from here, we know they're after a couple of wingers, maybe a centre mid, and I can see them being quite aggressive and quite ambitious in terms of the scale of play they go for in those positions. And whoever does eventually come through the door, don't be surprised if there's similar backstories to Kovacevic, to a Medic, and at the heart of it will be a data-led decision.
Well, you could even throw your second there as well in terms of a player maybe who just didn't quite hit the heights. And the reality is, if Medic had gone to Ajax and had played really well and stayed in their team, he's not at Norwich City now. So there is an element to that. And I think you're right, a lot of the work that would have been done, particularly around him, would have been Bundesliga 2. And I think we've seen historically, certainly at Norwich, but elsewhere, that that league tends to translate, not always, but tends to translate pretty well to the Championship. Certainly, it looks like he's got the physicality for it. I mean, Sam, one person we haven't mentioned yet, really. We've touched on him, but Harry Darling. I mean, that, as a deal, when you consider the level of interest there was in the Championship, what he does have compared to those two, in terms of he's one that feels like you can plug him in and he'll be ready to go, that feels like quite an astute bit of business to attract him to Norwich.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the impressive bit of it is beating all the competition that there was. I mean, people would have seen the clubs that were linked with him, Birmingham and Wrexham, I think, were for quite a while. Then there was a bit of talk about Rangers once Russell Martin was appointed there, and obviously they'd worked together. So I think the fact that they've stumped up not only a financial package and a sort of personal terms package that will have attracted him, but also, of course, part of it will be the project that Liam Manning and Ben Knapper set out to him. Of course, worth noting that Manning also worked with him at MK Dons, and probably it's fair to say got the best out of him at that club, so I'm sure that contributed. But yeah, the fact that he chose Norwich over some of those other clubs, which I think at one stage maybe would have been taken for granted, and of course for most of recent history, Norwich in the Championship have probably had the pick of the players that clubs in the second division want to sign. But you have to remember, at this stage, they've been in the Championship for three seasons. They're going into a fourth now. Finished mid-table for two of those three seasons. They don't have the parachute payments anymore. They probably don't have the finances that the clubs coming down can offer. Of course, they don't really have the finances of even the clubs coming up. in terms of Birmingham and Wrexham. And ultimately, in some ways, you could say, from a sort of broad strokes point of view, it's hard to separate them from some of the other just mid-table championship clubs who maybe will struggle to attract that sort of player this summer. But I think it says a lot about what's going on behind the scenes and what they're telling players, what they're presenting to players, how hard the work is to try to get those players over the line. The fact that Darling chose Norwich over anyone else when there were other interesting options on the table. So I think they've done really well there. And as you say, for all of the uncertainty that there is from a couple of those signings, he brings absolute clarity, because it would be, obviously, different players adapt differently at different clubs, but by and large, you can look at his performances in the Championship. You can say it's the same league, it's a very similar style of play that doesn't necessarily evolve at a pace at which he's going to look out of place next season. And he's been probably top 5 or 10 centre-backs in the division for the last couple of years. And when you do have maybe some of those risks, I think it's important to set some of them off with players who you are very sure are going to deliver. And I'm not sure they necessarily did enough of that last summer. It felt like there were a lot of gambles, and of course when you make a lot of gambles, it's likely that a couple will come off. But I don't think many of those summer signings you went into last season going, okay, there are 4 or 5 of them who could come good or might need a bit of time, but at least there are 3 or 4 who you know are going to deliver. I don't think there were enough of those players. But in Darling, obviously this summer, I think they've got someone who absolutely they can be pretty sure is going to be able to deliver in yellow and green. And also with that Manning element, I think he gives them something that they didn't really have so much of with Torup. Obviously, Emi Marcondes came in October and had worked for Torup as a senior player for, I think, a few months on loan at Nordsjælland. But obviously that wasn't the same amount of time that that Darling spent under Manning. Also the fact that he arrived at a very busy time with games going on, and it wasn't in the pre-season when all those ideas are being set and the players are learning about the head coach. I don't think he offered maybe Torup the same levels of that relationship that maybe Darling can, in terms of being that bridge between the older players and the new head coach. And Torup's obviously spoken since he was sacked about the fact that he regrets bringing people or not bringing people with him. And of course he's mainly talking about staff there, but I think probably in terms of players he could have done with a couple more senior players who maybe would have helped him in that sense. And obviously Darling fits that bracket for Manning in terms of the technical and physical qualities. He's very good at this level as well. And yeah, overall, I think the fan reaction told you everything in terms of how impressive a signing it was. And it looks like a very reliable one going into next season as well.
Should be better at set pieces, Adam, next year, shouldn't they? Both ends, really, with the additions they've made, goalkeeper-wise and centre-back-wise.
Yeah, you think so, looking at kind of the stature and that of Medic and Darling, and you know, Darling's goal tally, certainly at MK, I know obviously it's a completely different level, but you know, that spoke volumes, and he's not afraid to have a shot from outside the box, and neither's Medic based off his Ajax goal. So I think there's certainly goals to come from those areas, and obviously the activation of Jacob Wright's deal as well. You know, we saw some of the corners he swung in last year, and quite a few of them ended up with, in the back of the net. I remember the one at Millwall, and there was a few others.
They had a good run, didn't they, at the end of the season? Yeah. Sort of 4 or 5 goals from Burnley onwards. Yeah. I think he basically set all of them up with his delivery.
So, you know, being able to bring him through the door as well, on paper it feels like a lot better, you know, a lot better way to be able to sort of convert those opportunities and from set pieces into goals, which we all know in the Championship can be a key pillar to success, because in, you know, fine margin games where there's not a lot in it, those moments, you know, if you manage to find one and it finds the back of the net, or you know, you've got Kovacevic in goal making a big save from one, then that can, you know, can pick you up points. So yeah, overall I think, you know, just looking at the size of the squad and that quality, it feels like set pieces could be a good avenue to try and exploit next year.
Absolutely. Paz, let's move on to the big two then, Science and Sargent, who are still here. Just about, I think, yeah. Particularly with Science. I mean, on those two, it feels like Science has a path that's pretty set from here. They've always been clubs, Porto, Napoli, and there's plenty of others from a host of countries that that are interested and watching on as well, but certainly feels like Porto at the moment in the driving seat with that one. But Sargent feels maybe a little less certain at the moment. How do you see both of those situations playing out over the next few weeks and months?
I will leave. I don't see any path to him staying, for all the reasons we already know about, the contractual element, the fact that he's, you know, he's coming off the back of the season. While it had its challenges, it was still a very eye-catching in terms of his productivity. Separate out maybe the massive speculation and the leagues. I mean, it felt at one point in the summer it was a Eurovision almost element to it, like how many leagues can be linked to Borja Sainz. But, you know, there are clubs of a good stature who are interested in him. Porto, yes, are the ones who've gone furthest down the line with the club, because as we know, you know, there's strands to these things where agents are in, maybe making the first sort of connections and the interactions, and then it gets to a point where once it reaches a more serious level, it has to go club to club. He's still 12 months left on his Norwich contract. He's going nowhere unless Norwich get a fee that they deem acceptable for that player. So, you know, the Portuguese window is open this week now. I think it opened on the 1st. Porto, I think the sense is they will come back in. I don't think they're a million miles away in terms of their initial approach. The interesting one, of course, is what the science camp, Borja himself, would feel of that. We just had a segment there around Kovacovic and Sporting. Well, you know, Porto are firmly in that elite bracket of Portuguese clubs. I think they're in the Champions League again this coming season, if I'm not mistaken. We know that probably the heartstrings are pulling him back to Spain and Bilbao, you know, his first club. There seems to be a scenario needs to play out there in terms of their star asset, Nico Williams of Barcelona. That doesn't feel like it's accelerating to a point where that's done. Then Bilbao look at bringing in replacements. So it feels like it's moved on a degree, but still a little bit of work to do before we're saying farewell to him. We know he's back at Colney. We know he came back last week. He was doing his testing with the rest of the players. He'll be, until further notice, part of Liam Manning's plans. But I think it would be a huge shock as we sit here a week or so out from the first pre-season game if he was still in the group, come the lead into a Millwall and Championship opener. So, for me, it's just a case of which club now firm up that interest and hit the numbers Norwich want, and then he's gone. And the fact that Norwich are very, very proactively already looking at replacements and probably will look to do at least one of those two wingers. I mean, there's a suggestion, I think it's fair, that they're maybe looking at the Premier League loan route, and we obviously had the line about Luis Cumas. But I think their main winger purchase, they'll probably, if they can, get that done before Sainz even goes out the door. So, you know, all of those elements aren't happening if there's a huge question mark around Borja. I think the only question mark is now which club hit the number and he's gone. And that could escalate very quickly because there's a willingness from all parties to get a deal done. In terms of Sargent, well, you know, Wolfsburg have now shown a hand to a degree. You know, there's those reports in the German media, they are accurate from what we're led to believe. There has been contact, but checked this morning actually on that, and the feedback was they're nowhere near the number. And I think that's what it will come down to in terms of you asking me what happens with Sargent. He contractually in a very different place to Sainz. We know that 2028, I think he is, and it will take a big number. Ben Napper more or less said that without actually physically putting a figure on it. But when he did his press around Liam Manning at Cairo that day, and we asked him, and he said, look, there's interest in both of those two players, but with Josh, it will take serious valuations before they consider him departing this summer. And that was the case last summer when there was firm interest from the MLS. Figures were around about the low £20 million mark. I don't think that was the obstacle which prevented that progressing. I just didn't feel like that was the right time for any all of the parties involved, so it didn't happen. But this summer, yeah, it feels like, you know, maybe if it's not Wolfsburg, I could see other German interest. We know his backstory, you know, he came through at Werder Bremen. That's a sort of league I could see looking at him. Of course, the obvious link there with Parker and Leeds, you know, they're going to be looking for attacking players. You can see that coming back round again, and there's already been those links, and whether the MLS element surfaces as potential route as well, time will tell. But if you put me on the spot, will he still be a Norwich player at the start of the season? I think he could be, but of course, as we know, the anomaly here is that the transfer window doesn't close until after the season, And I think I'm right saying like the MLS market is an even later closing date. I think it's September the 1st in England. I'm assuming it's that on the continent of Europe, but I think the MLS is a later window. So I think the saga will play on. But that's one I could see just because of the scale of transfer fee involved, that it doesn't move swiftly. But the good thing with that for me is, you know, we're not going to get an Adam Eder saga. We're not going to get a John Rowe saga. We're not going to get an Abu Kamara saga. Josh Sargent is a very, very different character. He understands, you know, there's a way, right way and a wrong way to leave the club. And we've seen plenty of examples of doing it the right way most recently. This time last summer, Gabby Zara. And I could see an exit on those type of terms. When it works for all parties, you shake hands, say, thanks for everything you've done for us, Josh. We've made a huge profit on what we paid for you originally, and you go with our best wishes and go on and have a great career and prove you're better than what you are at the moment, which is championship level. But by the same token, you know, that won't happen if a club doesn't come with a valuation which for me is in the 20 mil mark plus. So Wolfsburg are interested. They'll have to get much closer to the numbers, and I think I've seen reports in the last 24 hours out of Germany that they may need to sell before they can actually really come back to Norwich with something that is more closely aligned with their valuation of that player. So that again all feeds into this feeling that it'll be a bit more of a slow burner. Science, yeah, that could accelerate at any given moment now. Sargent, probably later. But of course the upshot could be that, you know, in very short order into the new season, they're without those two, and you look at the goals they scored combined last season, both got in the championship team of the season. Is it any wonder that that is increasingly, now it feels like defensively they've resolved a lot of the issues, that's increasingly for me going to be the second part of the summer window, the focus for Norwich. If we're in a world which is post-Science, post-Sargent, where are the goals coming from?
Yes, indeed. I know he's not gone yet, so a bit premature, but you do look back on particularly Borja Science, but Josh Sargent, I guess, as well in this bracket. And you know, what a bit of business that was to get Borja Science out on a relegation clause. Superb, yeah. and you know, based on a Turkish team getting relegated, to then sell him for what we probably feel is going to be in and around the John Rowe ballpark, which was what, 14 that took him to Marseille. That's a staggering bit of business to do that in the space of 2 years. And if they could get him into a Porto as well, I think it helps them probably in terms of the level of recruitment, because you mentioned Gabby Zara, him going to Galatasaray, playing Champions League football very briefly, and it was more Europa League, but he did play Champions League football. Sites going into European football as well. They are proving themselves to potential suitors that actually come to Norwich City, come and show your best hand, come and develop for a year or two and push yourself into a higher sphere. That's not a story that many championship clubs can tell potential recruits, and it probably allows them to go and maybe, as you said earlier on, with whoever the next winger is, whoever the midfielder is, go and attract maybe a better calibre of player as a result. Sargent as well, if they can push him back into a top league. All of this storytelling will help them in terms of the way that they go. And Stuart Webber, Lee Dunn as well, deserve huge credit, I think, for the way particularly they engineered that Science deal. But even Sargent, after what was a tough 2 years, the striker that he's turned into has been quite incredible. Sam, come on to you in terms of the final incomes we've spoken about, clearly the two wingers. The midfield as well. The midfield department generally is quite an interesting one, because it's quite well stacked at the moment. And yet they'd like to add another to it. We've obviously had links with Andy Marcondes and Brazil. How do you see that area of the pitch evolving over the next few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it is a really interesting one. And I can see them going a couple of different ways. I think principally it feels like a more physical midfielder is probably the most likely. But as you said, with Marcondes, to me, looking quite likely to depart, I think that's something which basically all parties would be interested in, as long as there is that interest in his services. And Liam Manning, having played a 4-2-3-1 before, they do still, I think, distinctly lack a proper number 10. I suppose you could say Oscar Schwartau has the ability to probably play that role, and Michael Forson as well, but obviously
I'd like to see Forson.
Yeah, I think he possibly could play that role, but it would be a bit of a risk if Manning did seriously want a 4-2-3-1 as an option to go into a season with two players who are young, who are still developing, who haven't played loads and loads of games in the league, although obviously Schwartau got a decent number, and that was referenced by Manning in his unveiling press conference, but it would be a risk to go into the season with just those two as potential number 10 options if you really feel like a 4-2-3-1 is what you want to do going forward. So I think that's a position that potentially they could look at as well. But ultimately, yeah, in that deeper position, I think they've got McLean who can probably play that role, but maybe thrives a little bit more when he's more of a number 8 and he's got a bit more freedom to get up and down. They've got Wright, who I think has done excellently in terms of getting a bit stronger in the tackle. Obviously, on the ball, he's improved no end since he first arrived at Carrow Road, but probably in terms of his actual defensive positioning, his instinct for being where the ball's going to be defensively and for screening in front of that front four or three, as it could be under Manning, I think he could improve those elements of his game as well. So there are probably a couple of skill sets I think Norwich might need, depending on what they feel they want to give Manning as options formation-wise. But as you said, with the numbers that they've got there, I think the thing that we keep saying is quality rather than quantity is what they're looking for this summer, because nobody could accuse them of being short of midfielders. I think we've counted 9 currently at the club. Even if Marcondes goes, for me, 8 is too many for all of them to feel they've got a decent chance of getting a run of games. And I think most players need that to have that competition and that motivation to get into the team. I suppose around the edges, you look at Liam Gibbs, maybe Gabe Forsyth, and the potential for some of those younger ones to maybe go on loan. I don't see Forsyth going permanently, but I think Gibbs is one who maybe could go on loan or permanently. So I think there are a couple around the fringes. Slimane is another interesting one and a sort of tore-up disciple as well, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. But I still think you can't get rid of all of those players, and right now the numbers would worry me a little bit in terms of that competition. So I'm very interested to see what they do. I think they could go in a couple of different directions, but right now I think a more defensive type feels probably likely for me, and obviously we know that they're targeting a midfielder this summer, so it will be very interesting to see which avenue they sort of go down when they get to that priority.
Yeah, which probably brings us nicely to the end of the conversation that we're going to have today, really. But I wanted to do a little bit on kind of the shape. Ultimately, the answer is going to be we don't know. But I mean, I'm sort of going to ask you individually for your view based on the way they're building the team, because you kind of hear wingers and you don't necessarily feel that subscribes to a back three necessarily. But equally, you look at Maidich and Darling, who both throughout their careers have kind of played in back threes. Manny, I think we've said, is not ideological, certainly based on systems. I think there's principles that he is fairly sort of non-negotiable on, but certainly formation-wise, he has chopped and changed throughout his career. He's played, as Sam said, a 4-2-3-1, I think, predominantly, but at Bristol, probably, when you think of his team, it was a three at the back, Adam. How do you see him going at Norwich City so far, based on absolutely no games whatsoever at the moment?
Yeah, I wonder if a lot will be sort of based on what they decide to do central defensive-wise, as they're quite stacked at the moment across the board. You've obviously got Shane Duffy still on the books at the moment and has been credited interest maybe from the MLS. Will he maybe still be in the building? Cordoba obviously still sort of trying to reach those levels that I think, you know, behind the scenes they feel he could reach. He's still got Brad Hills, who, you know, has been photographed back in the building, and I've said now a couple of really good loan spells away. He won Accrington in League 2 and then proved himself at the top end of League 1 last year at Stockport as well. Adi Wiega, of course, coming back from a up and down but relatively positive spell up in Scotland at Dundee. So I could see maybe if a couple of those depart, then I think that would probably lend itself maybe more to a back four. And I just think, given the kind of options, I suppose, you know, full back, with what way does he go in terms of that as well? Does he go with Jack Stacey, who's just signed a new deal, slightly more experienced pro, who, you know, he's probably got that capabilities to play wing back. Mahovo, obviously, still, you know, still relatively young in his Norwich City career. So I don't know. I just feel like personally, I would rather them go for the 4-2-3-1 option. I just think, given the players they've got, and it will allow them to utilise some of their sort of wide players a bit more than the likes of Jurasek, who clearly has been brought to the football club for big money, and they feel behind the scenes as well as a huge player there. And could you really craft him into a back 3-5 system as easily? Probably not. So yeah, it'll be intriguing. I think, you know, that first couple of pre-season games will maybe start to give us a few clues. But by the same token, if you know, you get midway through the season and things aren't working, or certain games he feels that, you know, a back five or a back three or a back four might suit better, that's probably a positive that he's got individuals that are capable of playing in all of those. You know, Darlin and Medici both played in back threes, both played in back twos. Cordoba, you know, can comfortably play, I think, in any of those. He's done it last season as well. So it's quite good to have that flexibility, and they're not kind of having to feel that, you know, if they are light of options and injuries hit in a certain position, that they have to, you know, kind of sort of reinvent the wheel and find players out of position, because, you know, clearly that we saw that last season, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on this, because there are some players I look at in that squad and think, yeah, I could see them in a back three. So Antti Sinats, for example, you could see him, and if you were going with what he played at Bristol last season, in one of those kind of two roles behind the striker. Yeah. I mean, Mehmeti there, memory escapes me who he had on the other side, but you could see Sinats in one of those roles. You say Jurásek is more conventional from what we've seen of him, which is very little, but he feels to me more like a kind of chalk on the boots, where he wants to be wide and wants to get at people. So I'm not sure, does he then fit? I think they've got a little bit of a left wing back problem. I'm not sure Mahovo or Krizene are players that I would say are necessarily suited to that role. Paddy, what's kind of your view at the moment?
Well, I mean, you know, I go back to what, and I don't think it was that disguised, but there was a few things I thought from Ben Napper regarding the lack of pragmatism and how wedded Yanis was to, and we know that when the handbrake went on, like Portsmouth away or whatever, it was so alien to him, and by definition, probably how he was trying to convey that to his players, that it just didn't feel like it was basically plan A or nothing, really. That's what it felt like, and that confusion, you know, was evident towards the back end of that season, really, when it unravelled. So Ben Napper alluded to that, I thought, is at the unveiling, and pragmatism is the word for me, and this discussion here has underlined that. Liam Manning is a pragmatist, whether it's playing style, whether it's the personnel he uses, whether it's how you win a game, it's just winning the game, it's winning games of football. He knows that that's where we judge by. You do enough of that, then you'll get to where you want this club to get back to. So I, at this stage, without proposing to speak for Liam Manning, I don't think he, in his own mind, would think, right, we're going to be playing a back three and that's it, lads, all row in with this. I think it's going to be, let's see how the players adapt. There'll be different, I'm sure, experimentation going right through pre-season and then into the season itself. Because I think I'm right in saying, last season at Bristol, I think they did start as a four, and then it was sort of October, November time where, and I haven't looked into it deeply enough, whether it was injuries forced his hand or the results weren't what they needed to be, but they went to the three then, midway through that season, and then, you know, it clearly had the desired effect, because he stuck with that system and that carried them all the way through to the top six in the playoffs. There you go, a pragmatic coach. You know, he's not looking at it and thinking, I'm going to play this way, I need the players who can play this way and this way only. So, yeah, right now I think this discussion has underlined it, that there's a lot of flexibility in terms, particularly defensively, the playing options that they've brought to the club. There's some of the ones who are already here. You know, we're sitting down here a few hours after they've confirmed a new extended deal for Jack Stacey, you know, 2 more years with an option. His quotes in the club release, very clearly he's spoken to Liam Manning and got the sense, I read into it, that he's going to have a role to play, and a big role to play, and that maybe he won't be vying quite so much with Kellen Fisher. Of course, he needs to, if he gets an opportunity, take it. But if that is the case, Jack Stacey can play as a wing back, he can play in a four. So that, to me, again, underlines that at this stage, I'm not sure we can really box Norwich into a particular style or a formation. I think it's going to be very much, let's see what pre-season brings, at the start of the season brings, and then really, it'll come down to the players. It's always, as Lambert used to say, always about the players. You know, if those players get to grips with a particular system and it feels quite robust that they can go home and go away and pick up points in the Championship, then as he showed at Bristol last season, it strikes me that he's a kind of coach where if it's working, lads, don't, what's the saying, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So, yeah,
that's right, yeah.
Yeah. So for me, it's, yeah, at this stage, I certainly wouldn't be looking at it and thinking, right, they've signed Medic, they've signed Darling, therefore it is a back three. I think it's far, far away from that. And I think it's going to be all about adapting and finding something that works for Norwich, residually, robustly, away from home, Carrow Road, and then just honing that in. But with the versatility that they can change, whether it's game to game, in game. And that clearly was something that Yohannes wasn't successfully able to implement.
Absolutely. And finally, Sam, I mean, you look at the the trend of football, I guess, is brought about probably by PSG and what they did in the Champions League. It does feel it's a lot more towards that now, and it's less about, you know, you look across the Championship, the way it's kind of building, the coaches that are in it. It only feels to me like Birmingham, maybe Ipswich potentially, although I think McKenna's been, particularly that season they came through the Championship, was sacrificed a lot more in terms of having the ball to be adaptable and to be dynamic. It feels like that pragmatism, that ability to kind of shape-shift, I guess, and adapt, feels kind of like where football is moving from kind of a general trend perspective. It feels a lot less about kind of possession and maybe the tore up way. And that was, I think, throughout the end, and we might have even discussed it on this show, the bit that maybe didn't quite add up, because if you get up playing the way that Yannis Ovtorek wants to play, we know that doesn't really translate well, maybe nothing translates well to the Premier League, but that style in particular doesn't translate well to the Premier League. So it does feel like a kind of shift with the times of where football is at the moment.
Yeah, in a way I find that kind of sad, because I think when the ideological projects come off, as we all saw when Norwich had Daniel Farke as their head coach, it is that pure sort of unadulterated feeling of success, and you maybe don't get so much of that when there is that sort of pragmatism involved. But ultimately, as you said, you know, we've all seen the end of the story as well, twice, when Norwich first went up under Farke, and then of course when he was sacked midway through the season and Dean Smith came in, that it is ultimately hard enough for teams to translate success in the Championship to staying up in the Premier League. And it's made even harder when you do go with that particularly philosophical stance. So yeah, I think Norwich have moved with the times with this Liam Manning appointment, and by building a squad that probably can go a few different ways. And in terms of their chances of success, I think it's definitely helped them. Obviously, a lot of it comes down to personal opinion, and I just think that when you do have success with that ideological way of doing things, then it probably does feel slightly sweeter. But I think Norwich fans have seen enough Championship success. They've seen several promotions. They've seen a few title wins, and by now they're ready to see a more sustained attempt, at least at staying in the Premier League and becoming a Premier League fixture. Obviously, right now, that feels further away than it has for quite a long while. But obviously, they have to make the steps to try to change that. And I think looking back on Yohannes Ovtorek's reign and whatever you thought of that decision to sack him towards the end of last season, it's hard to say that he would be better placed to take a team from the Championship into the Premier League than Liam Manning would be. So, yeah, I'm probably jumping 12 or 13 steps ahead there by talking about the Premier League already. But yeah, in terms of that move generally across football from maybe less of an attempt to be ideological at every club up and down the country and across the world to a more pragmatic view, Norwich have definitely taken that decision by bringing Manning in. And I do think that certainly in the short term it gives them a better chance of success, and then hopefully if they can get success in the Championship of carrying that into the Premier League. But yeah, these are the sorts of things that are easy to say in pre-season before a ball's kicked, so we'll see how silly those comments look in 12 months or so.
That's not like us to look silly, I wouldn't worry about it. Gents, thank you very much. Thank you obviously very much for watching or for listening. If you listen, you can watch on YouTube. If you watch, you can listen if you want to take us out and about and in your ear holes and all that sort of thing as well. Obviously, this is the start of the season now, so we're going to be bringing you these more regularly. Pre-season gets underway on the 12th at Colney against Kevin Nolan's Northampton before a trip to the Netherlands as well. We'll be out there and bring you all the coverage to that as well. Very excited to start another Norwich City campaign. I think it's going to be less about transition and more about whether or not we see any progress. Thanks for watching. See you soon.